at the donut.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Exit the Donut Podcast. Today is June the 11th, Thursday, and as most of you may or may not know, Jurassic World hit the scene today, so that's definitely what it can be all about again. Once again, my name is Richie, coming to you from Tampa, Florida, and with me, as always, on the other side of the screen is...
This is Amy from St. Louis.
And I'm Mike, and all I want to do is go to Jurassic World.
I love when he puts a little PC on, so yeah. Jurassic World, I think we've been doing the math out. It's 14 years since the last Jurassic Park movie, and I think most people would want to forget about the third movie and just kind of think with the regular one. But, you know, this one was, there was a lot of trepidation, I think, about the franchise coming up to it because it's such a historical movie. I know for Mike, it's one of his favorites. Amy, were you big into Jurassic Park when you were younger? Was it something you were into at all? What angle are you coming from?
Well, I never saw any of them in the theater. My dad and brother were huge Michael Crichton fans. So, I mean, I watched them. I've seen them all like on DVD and stuff. But yeah. We did go, what was that, two years ago when they redigitized the original. I saw that on the big screen, and we saw it in 3D, which was great.
Yeah.
But this was definitely like my first like experience watching a Jurassic Park, you know, movie the first time in the theater. It was very cool.
Very, very cool. So a little bit of information about this movie. Jurassic World is kind of probably the most is probably like the departure from anything associated with the first three movies. Jurassic Park, which came out in 93. You have The Lost World, which came out in 97. And then, of course, Jurassic Park 3, that came out in 2001 again. And the thing that connected all of those were the characters. You had Jeff Goldblum, who really, really connected the first and the second movie. And then you had Sam O'Neill playing Dr. Grant, who connected the first and the third movies. The only character that was even remotely close to any one of these characters is a character played by B.D. Wong, is the name of the actor. I know.
Way to get
the Asian in there. And he plays Dr. Henry Wu. So in the original one, he was like a lab tech. In this one, certainly, he might have got his doctorate at some point in between. And it's really, really good. So... Let's go ahead and just talk about overall impressions of the movie. And I'm going to go ahead and kick this one off because I don't want to forget what I'm wanting to say. I think this movie did such an unbelievable job of creating something so new, but that pointed in so many directions back to the original ones. Like, there were so many freaking references back to the original one that you just heard, like in my theater, and it was me, half the time was going, oh my gosh, I know what that is. So I loved how, you know, it, because that's, I think these type of movies, that's probably the most difficult thing to do is, how do you do something, you know, fresh without deviating too much for something like, my opinion, like, for example, for like the new Star Trek movies, is that they're completely away from like what Star Trek was. Sure, a lot of the new elements were like cool and everything, but I think Jurassic World overall did a great job of throwbacks to the other ones. We were talking a little bit before we started like filming. I don't go into it to be emotionally moved or anything. You know, I want a summer action movie. I want something that's full of special effects, but nothing where it seems too special effects-ish. I love the characterizations. I love Chris Pratt. I love Bryce Dallas Howard. The two little boys, you know, were, I guess, needed and stuff. The older one kind of pissed me off a little bit a couple of times in the thing. But overall, it was great. the theme park certainly said itself, and we'll go into a little bit before we won't go into too much details about some of those little things that they did in there that kind of poke fun of like theme parks in general and kind of poke fun of itself. So, Amy, let's go ahead and throw it to you because I saw your comment was one of the first things when I got out of the theater. You said you couldn't wait to do the podcast about this. So, what was your initial impression?
I mean, I thought it was great. Hands down, so far, the best movie of the year. Not that I've seen a ton, but it was great. The music was great. You know, it was one of those things. I think my favorite part of the whole thing was I completely got lost and sucked in the first. I felt like, and I know I'm watching this, and I know that this is not a real place. It's totally made up. It's not a real theme park. It's not even a real island.
It's real.
And I'm sitting here like, oh my God, can we change our plans and not go to Florida and go to Jurassic World? How much would it cost to go to Jurassic World?
A lot.
You know, and I'm sitting here and I'm just like, oh my God, you know, everybody's laughing at the kid because he's like, running around. Oh my God, look at that. I wasn't running around in the theater doing that, but that's how I felt. And that's a mark of, I think, a great movie that you know, get pulled into it and stuff like that. So I thought it was great. It was very, very fun.
Cool. Mike, what about you?
Yeah, it totally absolutely recaptures the magic of Jurassic Park. It's not as good as Jurassic Park, and we'll get into the reasons why it's not later. But I actually choked up a little bit and started kind of almost crying when they come over the monorail, and when they're coming in with the boat and music's playing, and when they're coming in with the monorail and the doors, they go through the archway and they do the big pan shot of all the various, you know, big spots in the sort of central area of the park. It was so good. The movie's great. It's just, I don't know how anyone who would go into this film expecting to see a Jurassic Park-like film would come out thinking it wasn't good. I mean, there are things you can complain about. We'll get into some of them. There are things that make it imperfect, which is fine. It's really incredibly entertaining. It's really fun. There are way more twists and turns than I expected there to be, which was also a pleasant surprise. It's really good. Really good. A plus.
As we do more and more podcasts, I'm trying to come up with some, you know, relevant, you know, things as far as like how to go about because, you know, but it was kind of hard with this one, you know, it was very like the feeling that Mike said again, I kind of choked up. I was actually really more emotionally moved towards the end. So before we go on, fair warning to anyone watching this podcast, it is spoiler city from here on out because, again, you just can't talk about this movie. Actually, we'll give you – let me go over and give you, like, a little premise of what's happening. We're not really given much exposition about how they came across to the new park. I mean, it's already a full – functional park. I'm sure that in the second one, which was The Lost World, there were plans for like a better site in San Diego. The third one was all about the second island. So we're just kind of thrown into the fact that there is a full functioning theme park created with new rides that are very reflective of some of the ones that we've seen in the first one. There are more rides and there are more shows that poke a lot of fun about what modern theme parks are like right now. So again, from here on out, we can't talk about these things. So if you haven't seen it, I suggest you go watch it and then look us up, Exit the Donut, all right, on Facebook. We got a nice little set up there. And of course, keep watching and listening to our podcast. All right, let's go ahead and throw that into it because it is a full functioning, you know, theme park. And you were saying, Amy, like right away that you were just thrown in. Like, what did you like? Did you guys see Tomorrowland?
No.
Okay. I wish I could get into that with you because the idea is that when you actually see Tomorrowland, for those of you who out there who may have seen it, but when you saw, did it look fake? Did it look like a perfectly functioning theme park, like all the way through? Like, what did you think? Like, and you've been to quite a few, Amy, you know, especially with the ones like down here. Like, what was your feeling? Was it, did you feel that, like, you know, that ostentatiousness of like a Disney SeaWorld, you know, Universal kind of like feeling at all when you looked at some of the people?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The actual different rides and stuff like that, I thought were very characteristic, you know, everybody waiting in line and then they shut the ride down because of, you know, some snafu and everybody just loses their mind. The fact that they over commercialized everything. I don't know if anybody else caught it, but maybe I caught it because I'm a girl, but in the like final scene, like the, you know, the end, like culminating scene, they like pan to, I don't know, one of the storefronts and there's a Pandora sign. And I'm like, really? They have a Pandora store in Jurassic World? Yeah, I want a charm for my Pandora bracelet from Jurassic World. But I'm like, that's exactly what they would do. And that's exactly what they would have at Jurassic World. Because they're going to over-commercialize everything and sell the shit out of it. You know? So, I mean, I definitely, you know, like I said, the more I watched it, I was like, oh my God, until everything went to hell, obviously. I totally want to go there. Can we book this? Like, you know, how many years' salary is it going to cost for us to go there?
Did you see a lot of, you might have caught it, did you see a lot of, like, I felt like there was a lot of, so in the first Jurassic Park, what was some of the big companies who were associated in real life that had to do with?
I remember all the, but like this one, they had the Samsung was.
The Samsung for the event center. Yeah. They mentioned Verizon Wireless.
They were the new ones, yeah. Oh,
goodness.
But you got the dude on in the control room with the Pepsi store and the.
Yeah.
He plays Nick on New
Girl. Tostitosaur, whatever it was. That's Tostitosaur, whatever.
Yeah.
they didn't have back in the 90s, they didn't have the corporate sponsorship stuff like you know, set as well as they do now, but they had computers in the computer lab that were I don't know, remember what brand they were, but they were it might have been IBM or whatever, and then the cars were Fords, I believe.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah, and that was a big thing because it was a new model, the Ford Explorer, and mm-hmm. and they were, and at this time they were all Mercedes, I think.
Yes, yeah.
And Jeeps. They had the Jeeps from the originals.
Yeah, just like the number two movie. See, that was a big thing, is that in the first one, the sales, because of that movie, for the Explorer spiked like crazy, like whether they wanted to admit it or not, from like that one little scene. Mercedes got into the game, and the next year they came out with like their little hybrid SUV, and it's the Mercedes is pretty dominant in the scene where in the Lost World, where the trailer is about to fall off the edge, but he connects it to his little like
he can go in, and then the Tyrannosaur eats him out of the top of the phone.
Yeah. So this one felt like a little bit of like a combination of both, because it was a Mercedes, but it looked like a pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. SUV. What other things that I don't know if you guys saw this. I love the passes and the wristbands.
Yes.
I love the reference to that. Like, and we have you guys ever ordered tickets like through Disney and gotten like the box and everything?
No, we need to do it. We still need to buy our tickets.
They literally look like this. They come in like a box and everything, and they have like your name at the very, very bottom. You know, comes to like your little thing, and it comes like these, and that's what I was like, are you kidding me? That's so ridiculous that they kind of like, you know, touch on having that. There was the SeaWorld reference with everyone getting splashed, like, you know, like in the water scene. I thought that was like ridiculous. They still kind of had like, I'll tell you which one really, really cracked me up was the loser teen. Whose job of like queuing up?
So great.
He's like, I just work here. And how many times have
he gets his manual out because he's like, what am I supposed to do?
What does a code C14 mean or whatever?
And he's like, and you know, he's like, and he's such a robot. Like, have a great trip. Have a good. I thought that was such a good reference, you know, to like what theme parks are now, and they did like a little bit so. Certainly, there were a lot of upgrades. Like Mike was just mentioning, like the command center that had like a NASA feel to it. Let's go into kind of like the characters. that were available in this one. So obviously we have Chris Pratt, who plays Owen Grady, if I'm not mistaken. You have Bryce Dallas Howard, who plays Claire. I don't really recall her last name in it. Did you think, like, were they strong enough as characters to carry the movie, very much so in the reminiscent of the first one with Sam O'Neill and Laura, I can't say her name. So we'll throw that to Mike. Like, what did you think about, you know, were you able to stay with the characters to kind of bring you through, like, the plot? Was it strong enough, or what was your impression of the characterizations?
Yeah, so the plot's not the strong suit of the film. It's fine. Our dog is doing something weird. Their chemistry was pretty good. The marketing really failed, I think, in this film, because a lot of the stuff they showed between the two of them in the marketing was really stereotypical and even off-putting. Whereas when you see, like, the full scenes, particularly I'm talking about, like, the scene where he's talking to her outside his trailer and he's talking about, you got to eat, you got to hunt, you got to, you know, whatever. And, like, it's weird and, like, kind of predatory in the previews, but it totally doesn't feel that same way in the whole scene. It's a lot different. They work really well. His character, there's a lot of my problems with the film center around stuff they have him doing, but he does a good job with it. The Bryce Dallas Howard character, the Claire character, actually I think has a nice arc. She probably has her and the older brother have the best two arcs in the whole film.
Yeah.
And they really have both kind of a full arc where, you know, they go from being the disinterested teenager who's just looking for chicks and the girl who's too immersed in her job to notice anything else going on to, like, you know, really caring about family and trying to save people and having their heroic moments. And what I've always liked about the Jurassic Park movies, all of them, is that the girls have never just been girls to be saved. Laura Linney's character in the first film is not a character to just be saved. There are moments when she's screaming, just like everybody else is screaming, but she turns the damn park back on to get them the thing. She fights the raptor off. And in this movie, Bryce Dallas Howard has a lot of that same kind of stuff. Chris Pratt, like, there's a lot of inexplicable shit they have to do. The beginning part with the raptors, I really was very concerned about the sort of raptor squad stuff in the previews.
Yeah, what did you think about
it? Not much of it in the film, but it's a big part of it. But it's like, it works fine in the film. That didn't bother me so much. The stuff that bothered me about him was, like, he's she doesn't know that he's there at the beginning of the movie, but then like, he's obviously been training these raptors, like, and so where the hell, like, that doesn't make any sense. And then he doesn't know anything about Indominus Rex at all. He doesn't even know it exists. And then 4 minutes later, he's in the control center for some reason, and he knows all the things about this, that he knows that it's got the damn chip in its shoulder and that it knew how to dig it out. And, like, none of that stuff makes any sense. And they didn't need him to be the explanation part of that. That's areas where this movie fails in comparison to Jurassic Park, where there's not a lot of plot holes in Jurassic Park. There's not a lot of, that doesn't make a lot of sense. There's some of that in this. It doesn't really distract you from the film overall. But he did a good job. He's very heroic in the same sort of way that he is in Guardians of the Galaxy, in a sort of fun, playful way that's charming but not off-putting. But I liked him. I enjoyed both of them. I thought they both did a good job and had their moments of vulnerability and, you know,
I disagree as far as you're right.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that sentence back?
I disagree with you, Michelle, because I felt like it was perfectly laid out why he was brought in to, I mean, they had obviously, like, met before and they didn't exactly have, like, such, like, a great time. Before I go into it, Amy, did you feel like was it genuine, the relationship between the two characters, even on a off-putting level? Like, you sense that there was some kind of that there might have been something in the past, or did it felt forced?
No, I definitely thought they had genuine chemistry, which is good, you know, because sometimes it does feel forced in the movies. I think more often than not, it feels like they're just acting. Whereas this, it almost seemed like, you know, oh man, this is the guy I had a crappy first date with, and now I got to try to figure out a way to, like, you know, ask him to come help me when I really don't want anything to do with him, kind of thing. So, and she seems like a very strong-willed person anyways. And so for her to have to, like, approach him and ask him for help when she wants nothing to do with him, like,
but
that's
she checks
very,
her, but she checks her hair in the mirror.
Yeah,
she
does.
She goes,
yeah.
Over.
And what that part kind of got me, because I'm like, she could totally see him when she pulls up. I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you let him see you primping for him when you don't want him to know that you give a shit? But we didn't talk about it too much leaving the theater, because we actually drove separately because we both came from work to see the movie. So it was kind of a little different than our normal, like when we go to a movie, you know, we spend the whole drive home talking about it. So. Yeah. We briefly talked about it, but we didn't get into a whole lot because we were going to do the podcast. But one of the things that that I really liked was I thought she was great. You know, she does have a very good story arc. She reminds me a lot of John Hammond in the first one. It's like, you know, she's excited that they're there at the island, but she's got better things to do. And so here, I'm going to put you on this tour. You go do the rides and have a good time. And we'll meet up later for dinner. And, you know, and so I don't know if that's one of the callbacks, but I haven't seen the movies as many times as you guys did. So I don't think I made as many connections to the originals. But I do remember, like, when they crashed the, or no, it wasn't whenever they came across the doors, and I turn to Mike and I go, is that the original Welcome Center? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, so that was very cool. Cause I guess I assumed this was a completely different island. I don't know what I thought. Maybe I thought it was the lot, cause there were two islands, right? There was,
yeah, so the first movie Jurassic Park's is La Nubar, which is where all of the first movie takes place.
That's where this one is, right?
And that's where this one is. The second and third movies take place on a second island called Isla Sorna. Mm-hmm. And that's where, quote unquote, the real sign. They kind of ignore the second and third movie and they kind of pretend like they didn't take place. The first movie, obviously, there's a lot of direct references to. Mm-hmm. But they do callbacks to the first, to the second and third movie. There's more to the first movie. Like, there's the scene of Claire and Owen with the brachiosaur
that was a reference back to the
Triceratops.
Yeah.
In the first one, there's the flare at the end with the Tyrannosaur.
Yeah.
You know, there's the way that they that
which
the
until
kids are
they
stuck
actually
in that
opened
ball.
The damn paddock, I had no idea what she was going after.
Oh, I knew.
I'm like, what?
No,
and I didn't draw any connection to earlier in the movie, but I'm like. Yeah. I'm like, we need more. And it's
they
like,
did a great.
Because I'm like, there aren't more raptors.
No,
where are
they
going to get more raptors? It didn't even like occur to me.
Yeah.
Be a T-Rex.
Well, and they did a good job in both their marketing and in the way that they showed the park. They showed you specifically in the main area where the Tyrannosaur area was several times. Mm-hmm. And so when she's going in that direction, she's going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. The movie does a really good job with that. I don't know about where the Indominus Rex is and how they play that out, if that makes sense. But the rest of the movement around the main center area, I thought made tons of sense. There's tons of callbacks. The way that the kids are in that ball, the way that the Indominus Rex is stepping on them and chewing on it and driving it into the ground is a callback to the Jeep or
even the phone when she starts calling him, it reminds me of the flashlight. Because it like got the T-Rex's attention and like they maybe he wouldn't even have known they were there or whatever.
And there's stuff in the team, like the military teams and the way the military team's tactics are and the way that they've shot all that is a very similar callback both times. The first time with all the non-lethal stuff and the second time with the twist with the raptors. It's a very direct reference to the second movies, like, you know, good versus bad, and you know, the science versus the military kind of stuff. I can't remember what his name is, the guy that plays Kingpin. There's a lot of Marvel people in this movie.
Yeah.
And I thought his characterization was a little
yeah, that top. Was not, and I really like him. I think he's a great actor.
I don't think it was him. I think it was the writer.
I do too, but that, I mean, because, and I don't know if you like it, Richie, or anything, but I loved him in the Law and Order Colonel Mines, and he actually has some, like, he had like a breakdown on that show because he's a lot like Heath Ledger and some other, you know, Johnny Depp. Like, he gets fully immersed in these characters, and the character that was in, you know, that he was portraying on that show was very dark and had a lot of like mental like struggles, and he actually had a nervous breakdown on the show because he had like become that guy so much, and I think he does a great job in Kingpin, or as Kingpin, and but this one to me was very caricature and yeah. Like almost, he was the only character that every time he came on screen, I was like, oh God, I'm like, and yeah, I don't think it's him either because I know he's a great actor. It just, I don't think it was a great role.
The kid that plays Harley in Iron Man 3 had a really weak scene too, where they were talking about the divorce and his crying scene. I didn't buy it.
Yeah.
It's not as good as the original for a lot of those reasons, but it's really, really good. I mean, it's just really, really good. There's like the jumping, the jumping off the fucking, waterfall scene where the kids jump off into the water. That was like insane. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Oh, it was. That scene. Okay. Wow, you guys touch on so many good points.
We went on some tangents there.
Let me cover as much of this as we can.
Why you have to drive the bus.
So first of all, you're right. You know, Vincent D'Onofrio, who plays, plays Kingpin, who also played the villain in Men in Black. If was that one.
I need more water.
You know, I didn't buy his motivation for wanting to use the Raptors. I just felt like he had to be put in for some way to get the Raptors out there for like whatever reason. A thing that I hate very much about movies where it's so obvious where someone's going to do something stupid is that I really hated that the older brother wasn't shown any consequences of his decisions, as far as like ignoring like running away from like whoever.
Yeah, restricted area.
Yeah, like oh, I got this covered. I'm like, and like being an asshole to like his younger brother. Like, I was like, what an asshole older brother, especially about like my parents are getting divorced. I'm like, you're 16 years old. How can you be so like?
But that was perfect because had he not been that way, like that's realistic though.
Well, kind of, but like
you're supposed to you're supposed to care about when you're 16.
Hey, both of you two younger sibling here, you don't have.
That's exactly like where this
portrayal was fine. I mean,
you know, I just remember that like my sister would never be like, never would have been like, oh, don't worry about it. She would literally be like, you know, it's okay. Man up, like a little bit, but never like.
Well, but it's a story about him learning that everything's not about him, too.
He spends
the entire beginning of the movie focused on girls and his phone.
But at least.
And then when they're going into the visitor center, he starts to realize, like, especially when he gives the younger kid the battery. His little brother, the battery, and he's scared, and he lets his brother see that he's scared, and he sees his brother's reaction, and he realizes I have to be the protector now, and he grows in that role. It's not the most elegant portrayal, or he does a fine job. I think it's more the writing,
but
it's not the most elegant thing. But I think it works fine, certainly better than some of the.
I just wish that maybe he would like, for example, so that scene where they're jumping off the waterfall, that's like that scene in every single Jurassic Park movie. There's a scene where a dinosaur almost gets a character. Almost, like it's just by the hair. And that was like that scene for me because, and Dominus Rex just about snaps on him like a little bit. And then when they get out of the water, he's like, oh, I'm so happy you jumped. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, if I was the older brother, I'm like, oh my God, I fucked up. I can't believe I got you in this mess. I'm proud of you. Let's find a way like out of here. That's why I was just like, oh, what a dumb thing to say.
No, he says we jumped.
What's up?
He says we jumped.
I feel like we need to unpack some of this older sibling hatred you have
here. Here's the thing. In the first movie, and that's another callback because you see the younger sibling, and obviously it's reverse roles because it's an older sister with a younger brother. But in the first one, it's the same kind of thing. The older sister is like, oh my gosh, you're so, such a brat. And I mean, not as much as in this one, but like the kid's so engaged and she's just kind of like rolls her eyes and just kind of whatever. And I feel like this one was very similar to that, but I think it is very true of siblings. You know, my brother and I are not super close. We were when we were little kids, but once we hit like puberty, it was like, we were very different people and we still to this day don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. But I also know enough about both of us that I know at any point if the chips were down and I needed him, I know he would be there in a heartbeat and vice versa. And I think that's one of the things that does ring true in this movie is you don't have to, your sibling doesn't have to be your best friend. And certainly when you're, 11 or 12, which is probably what the boy was, and his brother's 16, 17, the last thing he wants to do is have to be responsible for his little brother and be his babysitter when he'd much rather be off meeting girls, being a teenager. So I totally get that, So I think that does ring true in the movie. That didn't really bother me too much. I mean, I was glad to see that he grew in the part. And
yeah. At the very, very end, I was like, oh, a classic, two kids, a main guy wearing a vest. Because apparently I think that's part of like Jurassic Park costumes is you have to wear a vest over like a button-up shirt. I think that seems to be like the kind of look and everything. And notice that Bryce Dallas Howard's costume was very similar to Laura. I think you said Laura Linney area. It's Laura Dern. That was her outfit. It was like khaki shorts because with the boots, but she had like an undershirt with like the loose tied like pink shirt. And very like, that's the girl, that's the guy, Dr. Grant had like the button up, like with the bandana and stuff. Mike, since Amy isn't here for the second, let's go ahead and talk about some of the other throwbacks to the other movies. I'm going to go ahead and do it one like right away, which is Mr. DNA. Did you notice Mr. DNA?
Yes, DNA was there.
I thought that was really, really good. How about the t-shirt that Jake Johnson's wearing?
Yes.
Peter Lab.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. He was great. They did a good job with that. I was worried that they were going to have, I was worried about how much characterization they were going to do where they were going to say, okay, we need a Hammond. We need a Samuel L. Jackson. We need a Newman. I can't remember what his name was. And they didn't have any of that. They had new people that had their own characterization, but they were still fun with his little dinosaurs on the top of the thing, which is totally what would happen.
Oh, yeah. And how about eBay. Did you guys crack up at all in the scene where he goes in for the kiss?
Yes.
For the that was awesome.
if you know Jake Johnson's comedy, if you want a little bit more of that awkward every guy's guy, even with like a little nerd twist that they put on this, go watch New Girl because that's the character he plays. It's like you wanna root for this guy. He's a guy you want to definitely like root for like in the very end. So let's go ahead and so we've talked a lot about references to the first movie. Mike, we talked about like all that military reference, to like number two, the pterodons and the flying ones, which were the big thing that wasn't shown. That for me was the throwback to the third movie. And then let's talk about what was new for this movie. So Amy, we'll start with you. Like, you didn't really know actually too much. You said that you only watched these movies. Did you feel anything that was refreshing about this movie that was over like the old movies as far as like anything like camera views or locations or anything like that was kind of, this felt like new to like the mix that wasn't like in the old ones? Was there anything that kind of shone out to you a little bit?
I mean, nothing that stands out. I mean, I definitely, for me, the second and third one, I think I've only seen once, maybe twice each of them. The first one I've seen quite a few times and I really did it. Like it growing up. for me, some of my favorite scenes are always when there's not really any action going on, you know, when you see them kayaking down the river and I'm bad with all the dinosaurs. I don't know what they are, but they're obviously herbivores.
Stegosaurus.
Those were not stegosaurus in the water. Best. Yes, but I'm just saying, like, some of the scenes like that were perfect for me. The kids petting zoo where they're riding
the petting
triceratops.
Zoo. The petting zoo is so good.
At the end,
when the poor little kids getting ripped off the triceratops because the pterodons are trying to pull them off, and I'm like, let the kid ride the triceratops.
Oh, God.
Who doesn't want to ride a triceratops?
You know, you were talking earlier about the, you know, the SeaWorld type thing with the attraction with the one, what was it called? The Morosaurus?
Mosasaur,
yeah. But the scene where right after the splash scene where they actually go down,
I thought that was so cool.
And I'm like, SeaWorld, not that I've ever been there, but they should take note.
They should
build that attraction.
That's awesome.
Where you then get to submerge down and see them in action under the water.
I forgot about that. That was great.
The other scene
I really liked, I want to go on the ball.
The ball was very cool. The other scene that I really liked was when the pterodons actually went into the water with the assistant chick. And you see them like diving because and maybe I have no idea how much of the science is actually real about.
Well, they all
but
have
birds,
feathers.
But birds do. Birds will dive down and swim into the water, so, you know, 10 feet to grab a fish or whatever. So like those scenes were awesome, you know, when you go from air to land to sea and, you know, and I thought it moved very seamlessly. I thought the camera, you know, I don't get into nearly the mechanics as much as you guys do. Like I didn't notice anything about, you know, the wide angle shots not looking as real and stuff like that. But I thought everything that, at least the stuff I saw was great. I liked that they had the infrared cameras on the raptors during those scenes. So you kind of were seeing it through their eyes. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
Yeah. One of the new things that was alluded to in the third movie, even though they changed their look a little bit, was the ability to communicate with the raptors. Now, I actually, for the sake of being in Jurassic Park, I bought everything as far as like the way that he trained the four raptors that he was with around. I think that they're dangerous, and there's a great scene near the beginning when he's actually gets with them, you know, for like whatever like that various reason is. And then towards the end, we all saw that shot in the preview where Chris Pratt's on the motorcycle and he's got the raptors, but that entire sequence with them being let out, you know, Kentucky Derby style out of like their cages after they got the scent, and they're barreling through and they show the first person perspective basically being one of the raptors. That was fresh. I really, really enjoyed that perspective. I mean, Universal Studios, take notice. If you want to get some kind of like ride going on, or something that's like new on Jurassic Park, that's something to like look forward to, you know, to be like a raptor or something, or to ride on a raptor or something. I mean, they really, really took pains and, you know, to show like, especially like in the last scene, you know, like how it generates the speed that it does and how sleek it is. It almost looks like a cheetah. If you've ever seen the way a cheetah runs, a cheetah's head is not bouncing, you know, like it is laser focused, and that tail is like a rudder back there. And I thought it was so great. Mike, we're gonna let you have this because this is the scene. Do you feel the T-Rex was brought back to being the champion in like the last scene versus like what to his fate in the third movie?
Yeah, I can't even discuss him losing to the whatever the hell. I can't remember the dinosaur. And that's a real dinosaur, by the way. So yes, the T-Rex gets his moment to shine.
Right.
So I want to say two things about that scene and about the movie in general that's related to it. So one of my major concerns is that none of the dinosaurs look like the way dinosaurs actually looked. What we got in Jurassic Park was 1980s style science because Michael Crichton wrote the book in the mid 80s, and they got it right in the first movie.
No.
For the most part. They got it right in the first movie based on what they knew at the time. But the science from the mid-80s. And we today have dinosaurs based on the science from the mid-80s. Dinosaurs had feathers. All of them, probably. And all kinds of other sciencey things that they didn't include. And the raptors looked awesome as like big giant vultures. And they could have been terrifying looking. Vultures are terrifying looking. But they didn't do that because they wanted to remain true to the look of the original film. Okay, so, but they cover their ass for that when Dr. Wu is talking, or Dr. whoever. When he talks to the dude from The Amazing Spider-Man, who Marzrani or whatever, he had a great role. We didn't talk about him at all. Yeah. I thought he was great.
Was he in any of the others? He was not. No, he's a new character.
Yeah,
right?
He's new.
Okay.
And he tells him, "Well, we didn't make these like real dinosaurs because you wanted them to look different. You wanted them to look like real, like bigger and badder and scarier and whatever." And so you get a little bit of okay. So like, because like the Mosasaur is much bigger than a real Mosasaur. It's probably not a Mosasaur. I'm probably getting it wrong. People are getting mad, but whatever. In any case, T-Rex gets his come up, gets his day in the sun. But that whole scene is totally a theme about man versus nature, right? You have the creation, the man created, the Indominus Rex, who is destroying nature, ripping nature to shreds, killing the raptors, beating the Tyrannosaur.
Killing for sport,
not being natural. Mm-hmm. And it can kill any single thing. It's able to kill the raptor one by one. It's able to, it beats the T-Rex, it wins. Mm-hmm. But together, nature conquers man.
Mm.
And together with the T-Rex and the raptor and the Mosasaur working together, they are able to defeat man's intrusion into their world. And it's really powerful. And really well done. And it's absolutely on purpose. There's no way that Colin Trevorrow did that by accident, the way that they did it. It's great. It's better monster on monster action than you get in Godzilla from last year.
Oh,
it's on par with the best monster on monster scene I ever saw, which was King Kong in 2005, 10 years ago, when King Kong fights the Tyrannosaur on Skull Island. And I think we're going to get more of that because they're making a prequel to that, I guess. That whole scene's great. I wish we had more Tyrannosaur. I love at the end when he stands on the helicopter pad as the conquering hero with his scars and he lets his roar out. It was beautiful. Really great. And he looked pretty good.
The one thing that I noticed, and you don't really pay attention to, or at least I didn't pay attention to it until they were in their fight scene, was how much larger Indominus Rex's front arms were. Because, I mean, obviously T-Rex has these little tiny arms that do nothing, that are worthless. But Indominus Rex's were much larger.
Because it's a raptor.
Because you start to see. But that's the other thing. Like, to me, as soon as the raptors met up with Indominus Rex, like, instantly you know this is going to be bad. Something, you know. And so I thought that connection was a little, like, especially if he's been working with these raptors for this long, I think he should have realized that before that scene.
Yeah, there's a lot. Well, but they kept it for the shock value.
And I thought it was a great twist. I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought that was awesome. Well, and then I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, and that's another part of where the movie goes off the rails a little bit. Like, what would really have happened? Like, first of all, there's no freaking way that if that monster gets out of its cage – that they're not going after it with the fucking hand cannon.
It doesn't matter how.
At the beginning, you know, there's no way that any.
You made it once, you can make it again.
I'm no big fan of huge business, but no, it's not going to happen, right? But the biggest part is as soon as they realize that the raptor's on the Indominus is now Alpha Raptor, they're going to fucking hightail it out of there. They're not going further into the woods. They're all even. They, you know. a group of military guys, like, I mean, I'm not from the military, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the military people know when to advance and they know when to retreat and seek a better field
even in the earlier
battle
scene when they go in with the non-lethal.
Yeah.
And you see that one guy with his non-lethal and all the other guys are booking it back and he's like going at it full throttle. And I'm like, okay,
this doesn't make any sense.
It's
right?
just for movie.
It's for
goers,
movie value,
obviously.
Which is fine. Right. But again, that's the stuff that separates it from the greatness. The first one is my favorite movie, and it's one of the best. I don't know if it's on a top five list. I don't know if it's on a top 10 list, but it's on a short list of greatest movies of all time. This is not that, but it's a really good movie. And I would say it's as good as the original Avengers in terms of delivering entertainment that has some holes. It's not perfect, but you love it. It's fun. It's funny. It's exciting. There are jump out of your skin moments. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Jumped quite a few times.
No, there were so many of those moments. First of all, how about the throwback to the original center?
Yes. I mean,
that was
great.
Did you know exactly where you were as soon as like beforehand? I loved.
I saw the door.
Well, you knew when you saw the door.
Yeah.
But first of all, I love how they found the they went against like the wall, which is basically where the dining room was, you know, where Dr. Hammond was eating ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, with like Laura Dern's character beforehand, all that stuff on the wall. And if I'm in that movie, I'm gonna promote the company that made the batteries for the binoculars. I mean, those batteries are 22 years old and they're still working, right? I thought he was gonna put them on his head. I go, those fucking things are still working? That's pretty good, you know, go for it. And then of course, I felt it was a little asshole to use the "when dinosaurs ruled the world" sign to create fire.
I was on the sign.
No, but I'm like you sacrilegious asshole. I really didn't like the kid earlier because he got this crazy mess. But that was like, you know, for shame, a little brat.
I like to believe that that's the original, actual banner that was in some prop room somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
I know it wasn't, but I want to believe it was.
You never know. What's some of the other things that were kind of cool about this movie? Even before the movie actually began, I loved seeing the Amblem Entertainment.
And they got the sign. The sign to the research lab was the same as the sign that Dennis Nedry, that's his name.
Oh.
Nedry spins the doc. Right. And then the Dilophosaurus has his day with him.
Mm. That's a throwback to the hologram.
Yeah,
that was awesome
they
when he throws
it
the
up.
Hologram.
And that's
then the-
that. And actually, that was a callback to the original movie's use of technology in simulating the park and everything. And the girl is a hacker.
Yes,
in the original movie, and the little boy is the one that turns it on. I don't know if anybody noticed, but the Iron Man 3 boy is the one that turns it on.
Yeah, I saw him hit the hologram thing.
When they're running out.
Let me just say it. Robert Downey Jr. totally needed to be on that fucking bus when his parents were going to split up and say, hey, kid, parents get divorced.
He really should have been, actually. I thought it would have been. I mean, there were a lot of people. First of all, there's a lot of really, really strong, like, I mean, a lot of people showed up for, like, whatever reasons. Like, I thought it was stupid to see Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, that was a little.
I thought it was fun.
No, not necessary. You know, get out of my face, Jimmy Fallon. You know, go.
There was quite, like I said, the whole thing with the divorce, like, that's unnecessary. They could just be sending their kids on a weekend to see their. Why does that have to? And I actually figured that out before, because you feel that tension between the mom and the dad when they're seeing him off, and he's like, that was a. So glad we had that last family breakfast, or you know. And there you just, and she's like, why did you have to say that? And it's like, oh man, are these two? And then when she calls her sister and she starts crying, like I at that moment I was like, they're getting divorced. In fact, I thought that's what the meeting was behind them. I thought it was like a, you know, like a mediation thing, which they don't actually get into. And they at the end, it's not as if it's like the happy family, but you know, you get that wonder, oh, they're all gonna get back together and it's going to be, you know, magical and stuff. So that's a little cheese ball too, but you know, you can let some of that stuff go.
But you see, that's what they had. That's already what happened in the third Jurassic Park movie. The parents of the kid who went to the island, they are already separated.
They're already divorced.
Right.
The reason the kid's on the island is because the wife was down there with the new husband. The new husband or boyfriend, I don't remember if it's a new husband or boyfriend, gets eaten or dies in the parachute. He never gets out of the parachute.
Right. And sure enough, it's first of all, I love that little kid from the third movie. He knows how to freaking survive on his own. These kids need to get off their iPhones and start learning how to
be
wild or something like that.
I want to see you run away from an Indominus Rex.
Oh, please. I would freaking evade that thing.
Another callback, the way that they come out of the woods.
Yeah.
It's very similar to the third movie when they fly out of the woods and they end up on the fence line.
Oh, yeah.
And they try to get through the fence line and the whatever saur, the dinosaurus. You know, is chasing after him or whatever and breaks through. The way he looks at them right before he comes out and like he's thinking. It was cool.
I'm glad the fear factor of the dinosaurs when they first hear about the Indominus Rex, where they kind of like see him like in his little him or her whatever in like his cage. You got to set that early. They did it with the raptors in the first one. I mean, and this movie jumps, you know, this movie kind of just jumps right into things. You know, I felt that, you know, overall, you know, I'm telling people that they got to go see this movie. Mike, before we go anywhere, talk about enough callbacks.
Yeah.
And the greater theme was yours was about nature coming back on man,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really poignant because, I mean, you know, that's the whole thing, right? That, you know.
Right.
Science telling us that we're doing things wrong and we ignore it at our own peril, right?
You know? Oh, yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, when you were talking about, like, the movie kind of does save itself, right? Like, for example, like, I recall reading this and I looked it up a couple of days beforehand, how, like, Velociraptor isn't really as big as the Velociraptors that are in this, right? But they kind of...
A combination of two dinosaurs, yeah.
Yeah, like, the Dilophosaurus, it's more like the size of the Dilophosaurus, the things with, like, the big ears and everything, so... Yeah. Any closing things that you guys want to tell people? By the way, did the kids go with you or no?
No, it's too scary for kids. There were kids in our theater. And I just don't think if you're under 11 or 12, I mean, Morgan's almost 9. It's a scary movie. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
You know, it's hard because the kids that were in there, well, the one, I mean, they had like a 3-year-old, like 2.5, 3-year-old that was seemed fine. I mean, he, I don't know if it was this year, he got a little restless at one point because my kind of game, he's like, is there a baby in here? Because it was just like, you know, babbling and doing like what kids do. Like, but when we were leaving, there was maybe like an 8 or 9 year old and I saw another 11 or 12 year old and they looked totally fine. So, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, I think it's probably a little bit intense. I mean, it was intense for us and especially we saw it in IMAX 3D. And there were some scenes where, like I said, Mike jumped, people around, there was our theater was quite full, and so we both had people on both sides of us, and the girl next to me jumped a couple times, and it's like, you know, so, I mean, it's definitely got intense moments. I don't know. I mean, I think that they've seen enough movies, they'd probably be all right, but I also don't think that's the way that they should see, you know. I think at home on TV is, because they're still, what was it we were watching? Oh, we were watching Deep Blue Sea. Here at the house in broad daylight, and Drew got a little freaked out. And that's like on a small screen. So it's like you put a gigantic dinosaur and people literally getting eaten.
There's
and you
nothing.
See, you hear the bones crack and stuff like that.
There,
like,
there's,
that's a little.
Yeah, there's
little
nothing.
Too much.
There's nothing. Deep Blue Sea's rated R. And other than maybe
but to
language.
Me the, yeah, the language is really
other than
difference.
Other than maybe language, there's nothing that Deep Blue Sea has in terms of animal violence that this doesn't have.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, there is some brutal people eating going on.
Yeah.
You know, you get the guy's arm bitten and then the blood splatters across the thing. I mean, there's some gruesome death stuff.
Yeah.
I still don't have my, what I've wanted for 4 movies, which is, it's going to have to be an R-rated movie, which I'm not going to get out of a Jurassic World Park movie, of the Alan Grant. The point is, you are still alive when they start to eat you. Raptors, like jumping on someone and then just literally feeding on them.
Mm.
You don't really get that because it's too gruesome. But I want to see them more like in their natural habitat, interacting in their natural habitat, And this movie's going to make a ton of money.
Yeah,
it's,
I want to go back.
It's tracking to open over $100 million. It's going to do as good as any movie outside. First of all, you said it was the best movie you've seen this year, and two of the top five movies of all time have been released since April. Fast and the Furious 7 is the fourth highest grossing movie ever.
Yeah,
it's only the third movie ever to gross $1 billion. And Avengers is the fifth biggest movie ever. I agree. I think it's better than those movies.
And both of those are great.
They're
movies.
Very good.
I mean, Fast 7 was great, but for me, what made that so great was the final sequence that to me, and I think that for a lot of people, that's what that was. Yeah. Doesn't mean that the rest of the movie wasn't fine, but I think without that whole scene and without his death, that movie would not have done what it did.
Right.
You know? And I'm not saying that it wasn't a worthy film, but
it's going to have a sequel.
Well, it has to. I mean,
So the first movie was great because it was about the park.
Yeah.
The second movie was okay until they did the San Diego bullshit, but it was okay. It wasn't.
It was awesome. Great. I like that. You know,
there were some great things in it. I like the second movie. I turn it off when they leave the island to go to San Diego, but
the third one was kind of okay. Lost World, because now these dinosaurs are all on the island running rampant.
But what's the story? What are they going to do?
You know where you go with it is they got away with all the cryogenic stuff.
Exactly.
Dr. Wu or whatever his name is, which that one made me a little sad because I love him and I think he's a great character. And I'm like, why do they have to make him the a-hole that only cares about money? You know, like I thought
caring about money.
No, because he said we still have a deal, right? And he goes, oh yeah, you're going to be you have nothing to worry about or something like that. I felt like for him, when I thought it was about the science and like learning and manipulating, like not that that makes it good.
I didn't take it as a money thing.
I
took it as he's going to be taken care of by the company so that he's not going to lose his job.
No, I took it at the end it was a money thing. And I didn't think that about him. I thought he was like full on science. And, you know, we don't know, science can be dirty sometimes and sometimes things go wrong, but you learn from that and, you know.
In the first movie, he was already like that guy who was like
caution to the wind.
Mm-hmm.
He was just like, what do you mean? He goes, what do you mean a whole entire group of females are gonna go ahead and like
made of entirely females and procreate?
Yeah.
That's the last thing I wanted to say about this.
Sure.
So the first one, the science is great, there's no plot holes, its pacing's perfect, the music's astounding, it's the first time you ever saw good dinosaurs. There's a million reasons why it was great. There's something that sets it apart that makes it even better, which is why things like Star Wars and Jaws are on that list too. The first movie is incredibly quotable. There are all kinds of lines you remember 20 years later, and I will see this again a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's anything that's close to, you know, you will wash your hands before eating or must go faster or, before we know what we have, we want to slap a label on it and market it.
Yeah.
Those are all Jeff Goldblum things, but there's other ones too about,
Hold on to your butts.
Hold on to your butts. And I mean, there's a million one-liners in that movie that people remember. Right. When he's doing the thing about the chaos and he taps on the camera and you will, eventually have dinosaurs on your dinosaur tour. That man. I mean, there's just so much of that sort of quotable stuff. I don't know that there's any of that in this. There's a few that I think there might be. And when I watch it again, hopefully maybe tomorrow morning, but it's so good. I cannot recommend enough for people to see it. It's so entertaining. And if you like the idea of dinosaurs in a park and monster movies, I can't imagine you wouldn't like it.
Right.
No, I mean, even if you don't like, they aren't like goo-goo for dinosaurs, it's a great action movie, And it does not, sometimes those type of movies, you're like, they could have ended it 30 minutes earlier and you would have been totally fine. This one, I was like, when it ended, I was like, it has to end. I'm like, well, okay. But I didn't think it, there was no slow point once it started.
Yeah, most definitely.
I felt sorry for Blue.
When you said that there was a, there was like that,
I didn't think it was. I thought Blue got. It was the first one to get of the three to get whacked.
And he's the only one that makes.
So he survived that then. Okay.
Yeah, because he got tossed into like the.
But he got thrown against that wall. I thought it snapped his back or something. But
that's another one of those. I don't know how the third one just shows up again.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, randomly. Right? I mean, it certainly wasn't the one that
got blown up.
Got blown up, right? One of them gets blown up.
I felt bad for that one because I think you sensed that he wasn't going to attack him.
Yeah.
Well, they're smart animals. That's the whole point, is that the raptors were smart.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say, you know, Mike, you said before that it's going to be a great feeling for you to be able to take your kids to see Star Wars. So you probably don't recommend for kids who are probably under the age of like 12 under, probably not such a good idea.
Honestly, if it was just Morgan, Morgan's almost 9. She'll be 9 in September. I would consider, if she was really into it and wanted to see it, taking her to see this maybe in 2D, you know, maybe. I certainly wouldn't go much younger than that. I'm a little different. You know, like language doesn't bother me so much. Sexuality, even not too much, although there's absolutely none of that in this at all.
There's a little innuendo.
Yeah, but it would go over any kid that's under about 13's head. But if the kid's 11, if there's an 11-year-old and he or she is into it or wants to see it, I think it's probably fine.
And I think a lot depends on what they're into, because a lot of kids, and your kids aren't into that so much, but there's a lot of kids who play video games where it's constant violence and they're used to that type of stuff. You know, I'm not saying that. I think a lot depends on what their exposure has been.
It's similar. Kids, I mean, it's pretty similar to the original Jurassic Park. It's similar, I think, violence wise to something like.
How old were you?
I was 13. I was 13 when Jurassic Park came out.
Yeah.
And I loved it, and I certainly think it's fine for somebody that age for sure. Yeah, the recent Lord of the Rings and Hobbit movies, I think have a similar level of violence. That violence is more cartoony and sort of darkish, like chopping heads off, whereas this is like people getting eaten by stuff. But there's nothing like really gruesome. Like the closest is when Vincent D'Onofrio gets it in the end, but it's not it's not crazy bad,
right?
I mean, I wouldn't like Star Wars. You don't worry about it. I'd be surprised if Star Wars is PG-13. Yeah, every Star Wars movie's been PG, I think.
I would say that it's a hard thing. I think there's enough. I think the bad stuff comes more, I mean, other than when you actually see like a dinosaur try and eat like another like dinosaur, like the full on battle, like any good stuff, the fear factor comes from what you can't see.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know? So like the original Jurassic Park, like the whole entire beginning sequence of that movie is when, you know, it's like you don't see the raptor, but you certainly know what it's capable of doing to that guy, lifting him up, the noises that are coming out with. So, you know, I think, you know, overall for me, for anyone else, you know, who saw like the last like few movies, I think you're gonna love this movie. It's enough, again, to reiterate, it's enough throwback and point backs to the original ones for all the best, I think, of what was awesome about the first three movies, while throwing a little bit more of a modern twist. There's even a new theme, like in the end credits, one of my things I always judge a movie by is how the music will be able to, if you took away the dialogue, is the music good enough? That's why Star Wars and John Williams are so synonymous. There's a, in Star Wars, there's a DVD. What's up?
We looked this up the other day. Jaws, E.T.,
Harry Potter,
the Indiana Jones series. I mean, one after the other with this guy. Jurassic Park, of course.
Yeah. And there's like a 70-minute DVD that's out there that tells the entire Star Wars saga through music, and it tells you everything you need to do about it. But I love Michael Giancio, who is the main composer for this one, but they still acknowledge John Williams for coming up with the Jurassic Park theme. But so there's something new, like even on the music level. Again, visually, for me, there are a couple of moments where I saw mine in 3D, so did Mike. And Amy, they saw that in 3D IMAX, so that's even a bigger experience. I wonder what watching it in like regular, you know, what kind of impact that will make. So We just want to again thank everyone for listening to our podcast about Jurassic World. Again, if you guys want to catch us, we're on Facebook. Just look up Exit the Donut. We're basically an entertainment website. We'd really, really appreciate a couple of likes. If you want to read some of our reviews, Mike and I, Amy, once in a while, I think we'll do like on our blog kind of things, which is exitthedonut.wordpress.com. And also, we like to throw a couple things like on Twitter every once in a while. But please comment back. We'd love to hear from you. We've been getting a lot of feedback about people who have been interested in seeing what our opinions are about a lot of these. And throw back your opinions to us. You know, it's always great to find out what everyone else thinks of it, especially in its great opening weekend. Now, before I leave you guys, what's wrong? What's wrong?
There's something crawling on the ceiling behind you. Don't be scared. Unless I'm seeing things.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. He's cool. Anyway. So let's go ahead and talk about some other movies that will be coming out, which are left to watch for this one. So I think we have the next big one after this one is the three big ones. It's basically, I think this is the only one left in June, guys. I don't know if there's anything else worth watching in June, but there's definitely Terminator Genesis, which I may or may not. We certainly have the Minions movie, and then, of course, we have Ant-Man and Pixels. And then to end the is Mission Impossible. What was that?
Ant-Man comes out while we're in Florida.
Oh, that's right. Hey, we're going to have to figure this out. Hey, you know what? Maybe we might all get a chance to see a movie together or maybe even make a podcast about a movie together. I know we didn't get a chance to do it for the one up there, but it would be nice.
Before you take off Thursday night, June 16th, that's the only day we're going to be able to see it probably for 2 weeks, unless we do it in the middle of our trip.
Wait, like,
we could do one night maybe, but we'd have to take the kids.
July 16th, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, not June 16th. You could take off June 16th, too. It's not going
to
be
good. It's like in 4 days. So.
I don't know why you're going to.
Notice.
I don't think you're going to see much Ant-Man, though.
Yeah, it's true.
Again, everyone, thank you so much for listening. You know, give us like some great feedback, and we will see you guys back in a couple of weeks. When we review some of our new future movies. Again, once again, on behalf of Mike, Amy, and myself, thank you so much, and we will catch you soon. Thank you.
Yeah.